All hail Harold Ramis. All hail Harold Ramis. Afternoon or evening, and welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. My name is Henry.
And my name is John.
And together we're Henry and John.
How are you today, Henry?
I'm doing actually okay. I'm doing okay.
Nice. That was a good intro.
Thanks. I practiced.
Did you?
No. What I did earlier, I was in the shower. I rapped.
Oh.
I rapped a theme song.
Nice.
It was terrible.
I can imagine.
I, like, appropriated this really horrible, like, thug voice, which was probably racially insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just saying things like, do a Google. do a Bing. Do a Yahoo. Do a thing. It was really weird. Somehow it was supposed to, like, get you to do research.
Oh.
Like, research the things that we don't know, because we're zero credits.
Do me a favor.
Never do that again.
No. Write those lyrics down and send them to me.
All right.
For a reason.
Okay.
But yeah, it's good that you're doing good. After last week's...
super depressing fun times that we then aired to all the people that listened to us.
Yep.
How are you doing after that really sad episode where we were both so bummed we didn't talk to each other for like 2 days afterward?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
My life isn't much changed, but I'm in a healthier brain space.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Like, not much has changed. In fact, things have probably gotten worse, but I feel okay about it.
Yeah. It's not about how bad things actually are, it's about how you feel about them.
Perception is reality.
I think, therefore, I am.
Thanks, Descartes.
Rene Descartes.
Kind of says like, release these carts.
Release these carts, says I, Rene Descartes. Is it Descartes or Descartes?
You only take the last syllable off in French. So,
I think Descartes.
Descartes. I don't know if it's a hard T like that with a Descartes.
I mean, I don't think the order matters that much as long as you don't put Descartes before Dayhorse.
Bravo, sir. But that brings up a question, John. Mm-hmm. What are we doing?
What are we doing?
That's a wonderful question. And I want to pose this question to the film industry.
Okay.
I've got a talking point, John.
This is the first time a what are we doing has veered. This is the first time we've used... a what are we doing's power to target another.
You know, John, I want this show to be, like, spick and span. I want it to be airtight, no tangents. We're gonna be one track. We're not gonna get off topic anymore.
Okay.
Gonna run a tight ship.
Okay.
Vehicle metaphor.
Make sure the wheels are... tires are rotated.
Alright, rotate your... okay. So, film industry, what are you doing? They announced today, which will... date the podcast some, but the upcoming Tetris movie has been expanded into a Tetris trilogy.
Oh, you mean a tetralogy?
Yes. The story they want to tell claims, I forget his name, but the director or the guy behind this movie, is so big that it cannot be told in one movie.
I mean, I can understand that, because, like, if you ever read the books, you know that L-shaped Tetris piece takes, like, 3.5 years to return home to T-shaped Tetris piece.
And see, your joke there highlights the fact that this movie is being based on a Game Boy game...
yeah.
...that has no story.
Technically a Russian computer game.
Exactly.
Made for Russian computers.
That was then sold to Nintendo, and I think the creator finally is getting royalties now that the Soviet Union was disavowed, disbanded, or whatever. But for a really long time, the number one selling game in the world, the creator got no money from it.
Which is a huge, huge disservice to how amazing Tetris is, both as a technological achievement and as kind of a pitch-perfect puzzle game.
Also as a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone on Earth. Well, no. I think there's maybe 20% of the people on Earth who don't know what Tetris is, but that's a tiny amount.
Yeah. But, I mean, this thing was so prevalent in, like, people's mind spaces that it was the first instance of, I forget what they call it.
Wait, it was prevalent on their MySpaces?
Mind spaces.
Okay, like a mind palace.
But you know that what happens, like, if you play a game so much that you start hearing the music when you're not playing?
Mm-hmm.
Or you start imagining seeing the game in your dreams and such?
Mm-hmm.
Tetris did that on a huge scale.
And wasn't it like Tetris Syndrome or something that they called it that?
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a fairly common phenomenon, especially if you go without sleep or have certain, like, mineral or vitamin deficiencies,
I guess. Yeah.
But, I have a question for you.
What's up?
What the fuck's a Tetris movie gonna be?
I don't know. All we know about it is there's no casting been done yet, but the guy behind it wants to, he wants to film in China and hire local talent.
Is this, like, a person who's known?
I forget his name.
I mean, is this like, is there money behind this? Is this just some crazy guy with a camcorder?
If he's saying that it's going to be a trilogy, I have to say there's money behind it. But he's also doing a lot of the moves that big blockbusters are doing right now.
China,
yes. Marketing in China, getting Chinese interest in it, and then splitting something up into three.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can find an article.
I just can't wait until this movie comes out and I get to hear the Tetris theme played on whatever the hell instrument it is that makes the bwom noise in movie trailers.
Bwom, 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 bwom. That would be awesome. I would love that.
It's, have you noticed that in movie trailers, the lack of a bwom is now the new bwom?
Pretty much, yeah.
In movie trailers, there are now bwoms so commonly that when there is silence, you are asked to pay attention. But then when it goes, I do,
alright, I found the article. I read this.
Mm-hmm.
The person who's making the statement is a producer by the name of Larry Kasanoff.
That, I want to say that sounds familiar, but maybe I'm an idiot for thinking that it is.
I'm not sure. And it's not a direct, it's just a producer who's saying this.
Mm.
Let's look up Larry Kasanoff.
Classic producer move.
Classic producer name.
Yeah. Larry.
Well, yeah.
Good old Larry the producer.
He's a film producer.
Weird.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, this is great.
He's produced movies such as Food Fight, the $6 million flop.
Yep.
Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2, Annihilation.
Oh, Mortal Kombat Annihilation was a masterpiece.
Man. All of the Mortal Kombat movies.
I didn't even know Mortal Kombat Devastation was a movie.
This is the guy who's saying that there's gonna be a Tetris trilogy?
There seems to be no more qualified individual to say there will be a Tetris trilogy than the guy who made Food Fight.
So I'm convinced now that this is not going to happen.
It can't, right?
No, this does not happen.
But I mean, this is endemic of a greater problem. And that's, like, sequelization, trilogiation. Thunder.
You said trilogation, and that's the word of the day.
It made a new trilogy happen. But milking movie franchises for all that they're worth, I feel like in any other rational society would have been done to the point that it is now a joke, and it has passed through joke territory, and now is in surreal land.
I kind of think this Tetris thing, I know in Larry Kasanoff's mind, this is an actual true thing that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I view this as satire and a joke, and if it becomes real, it verges on the absurd or the surreal.
Does satire necessarily have to be a joke? Can real life be satire of real life?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, this has to be what that is at this point. Just unwitting satire of real life.
At least he's not saying that there's so much source material that it just can't be contained to one movie.
I mean, I thought about this a little bit not too long ago. I was thinking about the new Star Wars movie, which led me to thinking about the new Indiana Jones, the new Zoolander, the new Anchorman when that came out.
Yeah.
The new Blade Runner that will exist in the future.
You're right.
The new Total Recall that happened.
Oh yeah, the weird.
And we kind of, I think we dress it up as nostalgia, and I feel like there's a better word for it. Maybe it's German, but I definitely feel like we are in a period of creation where we're not creating anything new or meaningful. We're just relying on things that already existed.
Yeah, the built-in audience syndrome that has sort of seized Hollywood is really endemic of a greater problem, which is lack of creativity stifling the minds of people. There's a Transformers 6 on the way.
I mean, there's a drug problem in movie theaters, and that is you see something that reminds you of something you have seen, this, like, recursive storytelling that triggers something in you that releases brain chemicals that makes you feel happy, but it's not creating anything. It's just making you remember a thing that was good the first time you saw it.
And, you know, maybe there never was a full feature film for Charlie Brown, but that doesn't mean we need one now in a post-Schultz world.
I mean, why do you need to make a Peanuts movie when you could make a different kids movie? Tell new stories.
Exactly.
Make new characters.
The thing is, you know, this Hollywood loves audiences, of course, for the wrong reason. They want money. They want movies to make money. And if they've caught on to the fact, like, if they can adapt something, if they can bring something to the screen that's never been on the screen, then they have a built-in audience. And that's guaranteed money. All of these stupid movies that break records, because it doesn't matter when they're released anymore. We've got movies in March that are breaking all-time records of billions of dollars because of that built-in audience.
Because I feel like it's never been more expensive to make movies or riskier. So if you have a guarantee, you're going to take it if you're a studio. And there are two things that really stand out to me. It's Deadpool and it's the new Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing both, and these are movies that when I saw them in theaters, they made me really happy. I really enjoyed watching them. I had a lot of fun. But I was thinking about the new Star Wars specifically, and these both come from different schools of the same problem. Whereas thinking about the new Star Wars, and I don't know if that's a story that needed to be told at all, because I loved it. I love the world of Star Wars. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, have been my entire life, and seeing more stories take place in this world that I have a vested interest in from my youth is really exciting to see happen. But when I think about it, I think, wouldn't it have been way more meaningful if they created something new with that talent?
Yeah. Are you specifically talking about how a lot of the story elements are the same?
I mean, I don't even necessarily think that. Like, Han Solo, great character.
Yeah.
All of these characters are good, especially the new characters in the franchise. But I sometimes feel like if you're creating something that has to be both a standalone, really great movie with really great characters that also pays service to an existing universe, wouldn't it be more interesting to make a movie that stands alone, has its own characters and its own story, not a movie that's made, what, 40 years after the fact?
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Kind of like, and this might be a bad comparison, but in episode 1 from episode 4, we've got some of the same characters, but they don't resemble themselves at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so far back, like, we're in a whole new world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could have gone from 6 to new, whatever, what is it called? Force Awakens?
Force Awakens.
7? If we could have gone from 6 to 7 with, like, sort of the same thing, with maybe one character from the old movies is still there instead of everybody. So much time has passed, the whole geo or intergalactic landscape is different.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe you would be more sort of like pleased.
Maybe, but it's really the Jurassic World style of filmmaking. I mean, it's emotional manipulation. When you see the X-Wings coming over the horizon, you're excited because this character that you like is back. It's a beautiful shot. There's a lot of craft. But a large part of you is excited because they're X-Wings, and you recognize it connects back to hundreds of places in your past. You're hooked into the machine at that point.
Plus, you're telling me in 40 years they didn't improve the technology of the starfighter, that the X-Wing is still the best model out there?
Hey, X-Wings are great.
I know they're great, but, like, it begs the question.
Mm.
40 or so years have passed.
Mm.
We still got X-Wing pilots? What happened to the Z-Wing?
Yeah. The only thing separating Jurassic World from The Force Awakens is a ton of craft and skill and talent going into The Force Awakens, making it a much better experience.
Yeah.
That isn't as obviously emotionally manipulative. And a movie like Deadpool, it's not necessarily creating anything new because it exists to be a critique of this thing that's grown old. And these are, like, huge, what do you call the things at the top of pillars?
Cornices?
Cornices, sure.
I don't know if that's right.
It sounds right.
0 credits.
I don't know. Anyway, so they're these things at the top of tent poles. They're, like, the masters of this.
Let's say pedestal? Like,
sure.
That they're on top of the pedestal.
Yes. But everything below them does it to varying degrees of craft. You have Transformers movies, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies, Tetris movies, Pixels, which is just a whole bunch of 80s arcade games made in a garbage movie. You have all this stuff that connects with us in an almost, like, dogmatic way with our sensibilities from our youth. It plays by the rules that we want it to play to, without necessarily creating anything new. And, you know, if you have The Force Awakens, if every movie that did this was that good, great. I don't have a problem with it. Well, when you have all these movies that are doing this specific thing and emotionally manipulating you, wouldn't it be cool if it was something new?
Even the ones that try to do something new, I'm going to use Rogue One
as
an example. They tried to tell a war story within the Star Wars universe with Rogue One. Executives saw it, said, no, reshoot. I think that it was like either 40% or 90% of the movie because it's too dark. It feels like a war story, and this is not what Star Wars audiences expect or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if they don't expect it, they'll be surprised. They'll be pleased, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Star Wars.
I mean,
They're war movies! Like,
no producer wants to surprise an audience. No studio wants to surprise you. They want to go back to this is the thing you know and you like. Don't you like it? If we show Blade Runner 2, let's say in a horrible future they make that.
If it's called Blade Runner 2, I'm not seeing it.
We're just saying, if we show a title card that says Blade Runner 2, adrenaline will pump through people's veins without thinking, did there need to be a 2? Couldn't they have made something else?
Well, no one has ever questioned why there's another Fast and Furious movie.
I mean, that's just a story that needs to be told.
I know. That is the American epic.
Yep.
Of Vin Diesel and Paul Walker and The Rock.
I really want to watch all of those movies.
You know, before The Force Awakens came out, and actually this was years before, I read an article that posited that the 6 Fast and Furious movies that are out, on average, are better than the 6 Star Wars movie that came out, on average.
I could see that.
But now, of course, now there's a 7th entry to both of those franchises.
An outlier has just skewed the numbers.
We really have to reevaluate the numbers.
I really liked to imagine where that sentence was going, was you saying someone posited that the 6 Fast and Furious movies are set in the Star Wars universe.
You know, hey, they're in a galaxy far, far away, and it was a long, long time ago. We don't know what happens after.
Vin Diesel could be a Jedi.
He's the last starfighter.
Yes. Which also takes place in the Star Wars universe.
Just like Battlestar Galactica.
Man, fuck that Tetris movie, though.
I can't believe they're making that.
Yeah.
Or, since it's now we know it's Larry Kasdanoff, I can't believe this will never come to the light of day.
I can't believe they're maybe trying to make that one guy.
How do you make a trilogy out of a Game Boy game?
You be the kind of person who, does things like tries to option the movie The Day the Clown Cried. You're a tone-deaf producer who has no idea what anything is. Man, I do not care for producers.
I guess I am talking about the guy who has produced every Mortal Kombat movie.
Generally speaking, producers have no idea what they're actually working with.
Makes me want to become a producer and actually know what I'm doing, just to get struck down by the industry.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, this is why this is why things are the way they are.
I figured it out. It's you guys. Thanks, studios.
It's all the executives, and it has nothing to do with what people want.
What do people want?
I'd like to think they would want original ideas portrayed in unique ways with enough craft and skill behind them to be generally still pleasing to the eye.
Mm.
I think people want the darker version of Rogue One that we are no longer getting.
I think people are smarter than any person in power gives them credit for. I think people want good, surprising things. I really do. Because I want these things, and I don't think I'm smarter than everyone else. I think everyone's pretty much exactly like me.
I want to live in a world where we don't need a previously on before the episode.
Yeah, I was thinking about that not too long ago, but go ahead.
Well, no, it's just the way Game of Thrones has been doing previously ons. I know everything that might happen in the episode just based on that, you know, 20-second clip before the episode starts, because they go out of their way to remind people of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, no, we can remember episode to episode.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to remind us that anymore.
I think previously ons are especially redundant now that we can stream everything.
Exactly.
But I was thinking about this, and television really did change at some point. And I think the turning point was, like, around the time that The Wire or Lost or any of those things was coming out. Like, the 2003 to 2004 time where... Maybe The Sopranos did it.
Could have been.
But television became this, like, really ballsy, mysterious, very almost, like, macho storytelling medium where it's like, okay, every episode ends on a big unanswered cliffhanger and bam, go to credits. Like that, every time.
I'm gonna blame Lost instead of The Sopranos.
I do think Lost especially did that, and that's what television really has become. And now, television plots are at once labyrinthine, but they constantly try to squash the complexity to fit into, like, a previously on.
Yeah.
It's such a bummer.
It's kind of like, you know, newspapers are written about a fifth grade, fourth grade level.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like television is starting to be at that same level.
But they're trying to tell big grand stories with a language that's very small.
I can't even, like, take a show like Once Upon a Time. There's no way that show has the same quality now as it did when it started before people really knew what it was.
Mm.
It's like the more familiar, the longer a show runs, the dumber it gets.
Absolutely. I mean, look at something like The Office. The Office I've been rewatching The Office.
All right.
First, like, 3 seasons, really, like, whip smart, awkward, cringy, fun stuff with characters who are smarter than you'd think, but were kind of cartoon characters. Season 5, season 6, it's just episodes of The Simpsons at this point.
Honestly, that's my biggest gripe, I guess. My biggest dislike of both The Office and Parks and Rec is that the characters become caricatures of themselves.
Parks and Rec did it real bad.
Yes.
Parks and Rec was almost unwatchable by the end.
I never watched the farewell season because they already had lost my trust by then.
Because, you know, as long as these characters go through the motions and make the audience clap...
Yeah.
Who cares?
I mean, the biggest example is Kevin in The Office,
mm-hmm.
who goes from a somewhat competent, still smart, a little dumb character to a complete imbecile
mm-hmm.
in the span of, like, 2 years.
Kevin's especially interesting because he's just very strange and awkward and is very candid with the cameras, but... His interactions with people, I mean, they make a joke for 2 episodes about him being special needs. It's like, not cool.
Yeah, but what are you supposed to do after 5 years with these same characters?
I mean, every show would ideally be a Breaking Bad and have a predetermined beginning and ending, live through it, and that's it.
That's not how Friends work.
But, I mean, I've been rewatching a show, and this isn't going to go into a what did you watch, but I've been rewatching Carnival.
Is that the... No. What's Carnival?
It's a traveling carnival show set in the Great Depression Dust Bowl era on HBO.
Okay.
It aired in, like, 2003, during this transition into, like, the lost territory of television.
Gotcha.
And I watched the first few episodes, and I realized that cutting between things was these, like, long, thoughtful fade-outs and fade-ins, and the episode ends on a fade-out, and, like, music, and then the credits roll. And it's so different from how TV is today. Carnival is a really interesting, kind of magical, realism-y show. It's about, essentially, it's about a being of darkness and a being of light who are born to every generation.
What?
And there's a traveling carnival.
You lost me.
And,
hold on.
There's people who do things like puke coins, people can raise the dead, life is a currency. Anyway.
Is this just American Gods and you're just being weird about it?
No. Kind of, actually. But, no, Carnival's really good.
I'll have to check that out.
But seeing a show end on a fade out was so bizarre to me. Because I'm so used to shows being like, here's the thing, here's the big reveal, the big twist, the big catharsis, and then bam, credits.
Yeah, cut to black. You know?
Cut to black, credits, that's it. But Carnival's really restrained. There are moments in Carnival that are just music playing while it lets you think about what just happened.
Oh, I'm too confused. What am I supposed to be feeling?
Yep. It's so good about tone.
Yeah. If we do a what do we watch, What did you watch? I've got a bullet in the chamber for that, and I can touch upon a little bit of what you're talking about.
Well, then, looks like we should do that later.
All right, sounds good to me. Man, we went on a tirade.
We did. That's something we feel strongly about. Oh, is there a piece of paper?
Oh, no, I'm just looking at my talking points. We got through one.
Oh, nice. What's the second one?
It has nothing to do with what we were talking about, so this will be a really good transition.
Just tell me what it says and I'll segue.
Code Academy.
You know what?
What?
So fading in and fading out
is a
lost art.
Okay.
Much like people should fade into coding.
You're right. I started learning how to code HTML today.
Nice.
Because I was at work, I had no clients, I had to be there for 3 hours, so I learned how to code a website a little bit.
How'd it work?
No, Code Academy is great.
Code Academy is great. I really wish they hadn't gone pro.
Yeah, I noticed that it was like upgrade today, and so I guess I could only do sort of the basic stuff for free.
I don't think you can do quizzes anymore, which were really helpful.
I took one quiz, and then it went to a screen and was like, do you like quizzes?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, okay, yeah, they reinforce my knowledge. Sure, I like quizzes. And they're like, well, then you need to upgrade to pro. It's like, oh, I thought this was free.
Yeah, Codecademy's thing was like, we'll teach you how to code for free forever.
It's,
nope.
It still says that.
No, they still teach you how to code for free, kinda.
Yeah, it's like freemium. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, it just doesn't have the features that once had. You should go to a free code camp.
All right, is it similar?
It basically has what Codecademy used to teach you, plus quizzes and stuff. It's actually free. And the cool thing about Free Code Camp is you code things for nonprofits.
Oh, that's
cool. You actually work on projects.
See, one thing I didn't sort of like about Codecademy was that, like, I would start a bracket, and then it would automatically finish it and then create an end bracket. I don't think that's realistic.
Oh, most compilers actually do that.
Is that true?
Most compilers will finish.
How do I compile?
You download a compiler.
What? It said nothing about this. I thought all websites were created by having prompts and all of the code is almost written for you.
Not exactly. But you usually don't have to compile HTML as such.
Oh.
HTML can be read from a plain text document, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. Like,
but for most other things, you do need a compiler. But it's fairly common for it to finish a bracket or a curly brace when you start it. Also finish quotations, just for, like, ease of... If you're an actual coder, which neither of us are,
no,
and you're doing
even
a lot of stuff really fast, it saves you a lot of time to not have to remember to close a curly brace.
Why is it that URLs have to be in quotes?
Usually it's just for, like, differentiation. It depends on how it reads things. I thought you were like, why is it URLs are like HTTP?
No, I know that. That's the protocol.
Hypertext Transfer Protocol.
I mean, if you want to be technical about it and, like, give the definition of the abbreviation, then sure, you could do that.
Don't read my robots.txt.
I don't know, I just wanted to bring up that the most annoying thing about Codecademy is that it's not Code Academy.
Yep, it's just Codecademy.
And so, like, for one of the things, it's like, don't copy and paste this, and it was, like, a reference to an image, and it didn't work, and that's because I had typed Code Academy and not Codecademy.
No, it's dumb.
No, it was annoying. But no, I think how simplistic it is to teach, because they're basically just breaking down all of the elements that you would need to know, and then letting you practice with them. Really, this should be taught in schools.
Absolutely. You can start at essentially any level with coding and be okay at it. You know, it's coding starts at 1 plus 1 equals 2.
Yeah.
Coding begins very simple. It's absolutely teachable.
Coding, and from my limited experience, I shouldn't even be talking. In no way am I an expert. I have zero credits.
Oh.
But it's like puzzle solving.
Yeah. That's really what I love about it.
It's like, you know, I need one of these things, or I like put that in. Oh, it didn't work. Why didn't it work? Then you trace your steps, you go back, you look at, you know, like all of your headers and your footers and all, and you're like, oh, I put Code Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you solve your puzzle and boom, you made a website about Ollie's bike rental.
And there's almost, there's something so gratifying about knowing how to code and being able to make something that when you put inputs into it, it gives you outputs that make sense. Like when I was first learning JavaScript, I made a like graph paper graphing thing.
Cool.
And I was like, I just put equations into it and it graphs them. And it was so cool that it did that.
I made a clock.
That's also cool.
Never told the right time.
Nice.
I didn't, I mean, how do you, I don't, didn't know how to program time.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I've worked with HTML in the past. You know, I had a Neopets account. Oh. I know how to set up my shop.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really knew what I was doing. I was always sort of like copying and pasting, you know, guides or templates that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I never understood why it was like, oh yeah, H, ref, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I never got what that stand for. And now I kind of know.
You're like, that's what an href is.
Yeah.
Sweet. That's what a P is and an H1 and H2.
I mean, they made it really simplistic. It's like its own language. You just have to learn how to speak it.
I mean, the secret about coding is, it's not easy, it's hard and it takes a long time, but it's totally teachable and you absolutely don't need to be a genius to do it.
Yep.
You can just do it.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about Codecademy and give it a plug, and maybe if people are interested in learning about coding or whatever, they can do that.
And you should hit up Free Code Camp as well.
Yeah.
Follow me. Now I forget what my name is. One of the things that I've been thinking about getting back into is doing electronics work on like breadboards and buying like an Arduino board and stuff.
Oh, so like electronic,
yeah,
wiring.
I love that stuff.
That's awesome.
I backed this Kickstarter that was supposed to give me a super affordable Arduino board. Never shipped.
Oh, no.
But I did get this giant box of electronic components. I only backed it like $20, so...
If you want to...
Totes worth it.
You want to try, like, making a mouse work again. I've got a broken Razer Death Adder that's shorted for some reason.
The Death Adder.
Yeah. But all of their stupid products are named after snakes.
Nice.
And so, it's a Death Adder.
Well, I have the Flying Cobra.
Well, I don't. If you can fix it,
mm-hmm.
you can have it.
Nice!
Because this one actually stopped double-clicking.
Oh, cool!
Yeah.
Yeah, if you give it to me, I'll try to fix it.
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
I like fixing shit.
I know I kept it because I never throw anything away.
I've never had a gaming mouse,
it's
so...
It's just like a normal mouse.
Those DPIs, though!
I'm sure that...
Damage over time!
I'm sure that means something to someone, like the professionals, but to me, it's just, it's a mouse.
DPI.
I don't even know what that means.
Neither do I. Hey.
You feel like taking a break?
I feel like taking a break.
Oh, somebody's out of stamina already.
Give me a break.
Clap,
give
clap.
Give me a break.
Snap, snap.
You break me Adam's off a piece family. Of that snap, clap, trap.
We'll be right back after a brief word from our made-up sponsor.
Ha ha! I don't want to know if she finds her family, or if she finds out that her family was with her the whole time! Ha ha!
Hey there, everybody. I forgot a commercial start. Shit.
Ha ha!
Hey, Henry.
Oh, John.
Do you like Wes Anderson movies?
I've seen Moonrise Kingdom.
Nice. Would you like a Wes Anderson movie, but not made by Wes Anderson, and also pretty depressing and real?
That sounds... no.
Then let me recommend to you the movies of Noah Baumbach. He makes movies such as Frances Ha, Kicking and Screaming, Greenberg, Mistress America, and The Squid and the Whale.
I don't want to be depressed.
It's like whimsy, but it reminds you of life. Do you want movies about divorce?
No.
Do you want movies about how terrible life is after you get your bachelor's degree?
No.
Do you want movies about how when you're 27 years old and you don't know how to do anything, sometimes you have to make compromises in life?
No.
Well, the Noah Baumbach movies are for you. You can buy them today at your local video rental store.
Is the music at least good?
Oh, it's great.
Oh.
Cinematography's good. Music's great.
Noah Baumbach.
Noah Baumbach.
I'm gonna say no to Noah Baumbach.
You should say yes to Frances Ha. Seriously, give them a shot. They're pretty okay.
Ha ha!
Hi, and welcome back. Shit, we don't do that. What a break! What a break!
What a break!
What a break!
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
To what a Zero break! Credits. How are you? Good? That was...
Shit.
I've forgotten the entire thing.
Ha ha!
What mad?
That was a good ad.
Great ad. Best ad.
Yeah.
Do they give out Pulitzers for ads?
I don't think they do.
Is there a difference between the Nobel Prize and the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah. The Nobel Peace Prize is for peace. The Nobel Prize can be for any sort of area.
Oh, that Peace Prize seems way harder to get.
I mean, like, you can get a Nobel Prize in chemistry or something like that.
Oh, chemistry's not peaceful.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Very violent.
Very volatile reactions.
Oh.
Speaking of things nobody wants to hear.
Yeah.
Let's continue our podcast.
Great. So what,
did?
What did you...
John, just say it. Come out and say it.
Okay, one, two, three. What did you watch? What did you watch? Our segment where we talk about things that we have enjoyed with our eyes and maybe our other senses as well, but not anything that's solely not our eyes. Man, I feel like I had that really tightened down like earlier in the season. It's just falling apart. Anyway, what did you watch?
I watched The Newsroom.
Oh, that has Jeff Daniels in it.
It does have Jeff Daniels in it. The Newsroom is a show by Aaron Sorkin.
Of The West Wing.
Who did The West Wing.
The Steve Jobs.
What?
Didn't Aaron Sorkin write the dialogue for that new Steve Jobs? Not the dialogue. Didn't he write that new Steve Jobs movie?
The Michael Fassbender one?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin, who's known for having really, really smart characters,
mm-hmm.
who all talk like they're from the 1920s.
Hyper-competent, you might say.
They all talk so fast, it's like really delightful in the weirdest way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like someone will say something and immediately... they're, like, rebutting, and then it's, like, really smart banter that you don't really see too much today in television.
Aaron Sorkin doesn't really believe in pauses.
No, he really doesn't. Characters are often walking and talking at the same time.
Oh, good walk and talk.
It's just funny, because the West Wing was all walk and talks. Mm-hmm. Every scene, if you watch carefully, someone's walking.
And talking.
At the same time. But no, The Newsroom's really good. It's like, the story is about a news anchor who has, for the past few years, he just wanted to please everybody, built his whole career on being likable. And now, he wants to tell the news.
Mm-hmm.
And he's working for someone who also wants to tell the news. And then his ex-girlfriend comes back into the picture, and she also works in the news, and she just wants to tell the news.
Do they tell the news?
Yeah, they do it.
Nice.
Much to the dismay of the company they work for, the enjoyment of their viewers, other people, the president maybe. No, it's a really good, it's a good show. It's only 3 seasons. It's only 25 episodes long.
Okay, in total?
In total.
Oh.
And it's really succinct, and it's kind of got a Breaking Bad thing where, like, the story starts, and it ends, and then you kind of just go through the journey
mm-hmm.
with some really lovable characters who just, like, witty banter their asses off.
I love me some witty banter. I've really been appreciating some, like, dry, serious... plotty kind of television lately, so I can see myself enjoying that.
And to speak to sort of the fade in, fade out versus the straight cut to black sort of way to end an episode, Aaron Sorkin seems to like both.
Mm.
Some episodes, sort of the episodes that end on a good note, will end with a song overplaying and sort of a slow montage of scenes, sort of wrapping up each character's story from the episode. However, when he gets more caught up in, like, an over arc for, like, 3 episodes or so, sometimes the episode will end very abruptly with Jeff Daniels saying, well, we gotta do that, boom, to black.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it kind of gives you an idea that the story's not wrapped up yet, mm-hmm. and based on, like, what was just said, you kind of know the direction of the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
So he uses both, and I feel like he makes a conscious decision of how to end an episode, so it's not just, like, cliffhangery attention grabbers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he gives you a little bit of resolution, so it's like, yeah, I can stop watching now and come back to it later.
So not so formulaic.
Not at all formulaic.
I've watched a fair share of House of Cards.
Yeah?
I feel like House of Cards might be the antithesis of this kind of design for really, like, plotty, political... like, interpersonal dramas.
Yeah.
Because House of Cards is very, like, bam, 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 stuff's messed up, yeah. bam, bam, bam.
I'm leaving you. Boom, bam, bing. I'm gonna be a president. Boom, bam, boom.
I
also wanna be president. Bing, bam, boom.
Very melodramatic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, blown up. House of Cards is fun to watch, but it's very much like a guilty pleasure kind of soap opera-y thing.
It's a Mad Men thing where, like, the people who actually would live this would not act this way.
No.
Not at all.
No.
But is the newsroom, does it have some verisimilitude?
Oh, definitely. Everything is verisimilitudes. I can never say that word. We're gonna skip past it. But no, everything is very realistic. There are a few down moments where it's like, well, apparently he wanted some things to have more weight than they did, and for whatever reason, it doesn't quite land the way that you want it to. But it does a really interesting sort of experiment with storytelling. A few episodes they're kind of presented out of order. There's one episode where one of the characters is in a meeting for the entire episode, and it's kind of like, it starts in the meeting, and it's like, well, that brings us to this point of time, and then it flashes back to show what's that point of time.
Okay.
And then season two does that for the entire season.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So it's like it's experimenting with storytelling, with how you present a story, in what order, how like some reveals build intrigue, and how other reveals are like, well, that's weird because I cared about that when I first learned about it, but when I realized why it happened, I'm less interested. So like sometimes things don't pay off, and I think that's just, you know, it's a risk you take with that sort of storytelling where it's like, I'm trying to make my audience really interested in this, like a character changes her hair. It's like, well, why'd she change her hair? And then eventually when you find out, it's like, oh, well, that makes sense, but it seemed like it was more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but overall, it's a really good show. If we're doing, like, a rating system, I give it a solid A-.
A-?
Yeah.
That sounds like a good rating.
It's on HBO Go, so if you have access to that...
Only the bourgeois.
I think... this doesn't help anybody, but I think some HBO shows are also on Amazon Prime.
Nice. So maybe it's on there.
Pay $100 a year, or pay some weird premium fee a month.
Yay.
Yeah, whatever.
Or free if you already have HBO.
Or free if you already have HBO.
So, The Newsroom on HBO and HBO Go.
By Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkind. I have a thing. And in fact, this What Did You Watch will be an interesting choose your own What Did You Watch.
Okay.
Would you like to talk about a big budget, happy Pixar movie?
Okay.
Or would you like to talk about a plotty, realistic kind of downer movie? The orbs are before you.
If, for those of you who can't see, John is, like, fondling orbs above his head.
The orbs.
It's really
the
weird.
The story orbs.
But I'm gonna lean toward the happy-go-lucky Pixar movie, because we had a really down week last week, and I think we could use a spoiler-free discussion.
I see. Here is the other orb. It contained a spotlight, and now it is crushed.
Well, I'm glad. Okay. You said here, so I thought I would get... Whatever. Talk about Finding Dory. Oh no, did I ruin it?
Oh no. Spotlight's a really good movie. Absolutely don't agree with the Best Picture win, but whatever. So Finding Dory...
All right.
...is this movie by a little company called Pixar.
Maybe you've heard of them?
Maybe. They made a movie called Megamind...
They made a little movie called Wreck-It Ralph.
They made a little movie called Minions. No, no, no. Anyway, Finding Dory, sequel to Finding Nemo. I don't think there's anyone listening to this who doesn't know what that is.
Finding Nemo, is that 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, whatever. So Finding Dory is a real departure for Pixar in terms of storytelling, because I find that Pixar is usually really invested in showing you, kind of flexing their technological muscles, being like, these are the things we can create because we have the best animation directors in the world.
Like how The Incredibles was just to show that they could animate wet black hair.
Yes.
The entire movie was just to get Violet into the water. To show that they could animate wet black hair.
And I mean, look at, like, The Good Dinosaur. The Good Dinosaur is 100% that.
Wet black hair?
No, 100% them going, look how beautiful these things are we can make.
I thought The Good Dinosaur was a show off. Look, we can make an ugly rendered dinosaur that in the commercials looks like a 3-year-old put together and still sell a million tickets.
It was that character amongst these amazing vistas and landscapes in the American West.
There were dinosaurs in the American West?
What? Yeah.
Did they find any cowboys?
Utah Raptors.
Cowboys and dinosaurs?
No, like the western part of the United States. The middle of North America? Yeah, middle of North America, west.
Cowboy town.
Yes. And they, in the they past.
Were, oh, in the past. In, cowboys were in the past!
There are cowboy T-Rexes.
Talk about Finding Dory.
No. What I'm saying is that Pixar is overly occupied sometimes with showing you how beautiful they can make things, and Finding Dory is very close and personal and dialogue-driven and kind of story heavy. It's a lot of people talking to each other and going on little small scale adventures or misadventures. Woohoo. But it's
So you're saying this movie's more of a series of vignettes?
No, but it's got a lot of dialogue.
Okay.
It's less look at all these amazing things, look at the jet stream from the first Finding Nemo. It's less huge amounts of things, and if there are things that are happening that are, like, visually splendid, they're happening kind of in the background. And there are a few examples where they say, oh, we're also good at making things like giant manta ray swarms.
So do you think this is a result of Pixar going from one movie a year to this new sequelized 3-4 movie a year model that we're seeing now?
I'm not sure, because I'd honestly say The Finding Dory is kind of the most heart I've seen of a Pixar movie in a while.
All right.
There's a lot of honest emotion poured into this movie, and it's really funny. There are great characters throughout. Idris Elba plays this hilarious seal.
Idris Elba is in it?
Idris Elba is a seal.
Seal?
Yeah.
But seals eat fish.
It's really funny.
Is there another reprise of, like, fish are friends, not food?
There's very little, like, predation that takes place. There aren't huge threats. Most of the movie takes place in, an aquarium/marine life institute.
It does?
Yeah, a lot of the movie does.
Really?
Yes.
I did not see that coming.
Maybe, like, 50 or 60% of the movie. And,
spoiler.
Whatever. It happens in the first, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, that means we start out, and then eventually, since it's not 90 or 80%, we leave.
Or it goes between the two. How about that? But it really is a surprising performance. Ellen DeGeneres, really, really great as Dory. There are a couple of times. Also, want to mention this real quick. The Pixar short beforehand is called Piper. Amazing.
Why are their shorts always so great?
Piper is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen computer generated.
Oh, well, now I just want to see that.
Unbelievable how good Piper looks.
Is it about a guy who lures a bunch of rats out of a town?
Close. It's about a tiny bird.
How is that close?
You know those birds that when the tide comes in and goes out, they skitter up and eat all the things that the tide revealed, then they skitter away when the tide comes back?
I didn't live on a beach, so no, I don't know what this is.
Oh, well, it's about those.
All right.
It's about those birds. No dialogue, really naturalistic. It's really good.
How does it stack to, say, Paper Man?
I'd say from, let's say from a Sanjay Super Team to a Lava, it's about a 7.
All right.
Nah, it's an 8. Look, okay, I like Pixar movies.
I understand.
Also, Sanjay Super Team was the worst one. Anyway, a lot of people will disagree with that. There is a moment at the end of the movie, which I won't spoil, where Pixar clearly pulls back from saying, we can do dialogue, we can do these, like, fun little adventure things, we can do this kind of heartfelt story. Also, just a reminder, we have some of the people with the best taste in Hollywood making some of the most visually interesting things happen on a silver screen right now.
That's awesome.
There's a thing where, like, man, it is unfair how talented the team at Pixar is that they make this one moment so good.
That sounds like a recommendation to me.
Also, Sigourney Weaver's in it. End of discussion.
Who? What?
So, Finding Dory.
The alien chick?
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver.
Wait, is she just in it as herself? Because that... Yeah. What?
Sigourney Weaver is in the movie as herself.
Is she fighting an alien?
And that, dear listeners, you'll have to find out for yourself.
Alright. I want you to imagine the Pixar logo come up, and then it goes away, and then Alien comes up, and it's like a Pixar recreated Alien.
That sounds great.
Movie.
That sounds amazing.
We need to go to Hollywood or Florida. I don't know where Pixar is, and pitch that.
They're probably in like Utah or something.
And they'll be like, we don't do remakes, and I'm like, I don't care.
You're gonna make The Incredibles 2. Fuck you.
5 years ago, you said you didn't do sequels. We're making a rated PG-13, no, a rated R Pixar Alien.
Yep. That would be great. I'd love that.
That'd be awesome.
A hard R, too.
So, would you recommend people see The Finding Dory?
As someone who has seen pretty much all of the Pixar movies of recent years, and has not liked many of them, Finding Dory is really great.
You saw Cars?
Yeah.
Ugh.
No, Cars is the worst.
I did not see Cars.
I saw Cars. I saw Cars, too.
I refuse on both accounts.
Both are awful.
What else? Did they do Brave?
No, Brave was Disney, not Pixar.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I think you're wrong.
Well, didn't see it anyway.
What else have they done as of late?
Inside Out?
That one was okay.
Inside Out was good. I liked Inside Out. It had problems.
It had one of the saddest moments I've ever seen.
But really, really good, message in Inside Out. Really good, emotional intelligence message.
How did they go that long without realizing they can combine emotions? I mean, she's 7 or 8.
It's a Pixar movie.
You had 7 or 8 years to develop that. Ugh!
Joy is the real villain. Anyway.
Of course she is.
Finding Dory's real good, watch it.
So, the newsroom and Finding Dory. Two things we recommend you watch with your eyes and not with your mouth.
Both full of walk and talks. Remember when President Bartlett was just keep walking, just keep talking?
And then somebody else from the West Wing showed up and was a fish?
Yes. And it's I'm a jellyfish. Here's your papers. So, it looks like there's another talking point.
Ooh.
On that piece of paper.
You can't even see it, but you know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a little segment. Questions from you for statements with us.
I feel like we could have done that read better.
Let's try that better.
Questions from you with statements from us. There we go.
This is our mail segment.
Yep.
Which
you got in contact with us. And if you want to get in contact with us,
we'll handle that later.
Fine.
Let's actually get to the mail.
I wanted to make it so before the reader mail we could do that. But we don't have reader mail often. Listener mail. Reader mail.
They read the podcast.
We don't have listener mail often enough for me to make that a thing. So it'll be at the end this time.
It's a send-off.
It'll be a thing later.
This comes from First.
First?
Do you remember First? First was the first person.
Right, First! Yes.
Her name's Jamie.
Dear First.
We call her First because she was the first person to get in contact with us.
Dearest First.
I was trying to remember.
First, Eric, Run.
Yeah, those are the three.
All right,
this email comes with the, what do they call that? Subject.
Ah.
Super Possibilities.
Hmm.
And First writes, Hola, compadres.
I don't speak French.
Your recent discussions on Cappy Americal and video games have made me curious. If you two were a crime-fighting team, how do you think your dynamic would work? Would your powers be different and complement each other, or would you both have similar abilities? Also, where would your secret lair would be? Where would your secret lair be? Though you don't need to reveal the exact location on the air, if you'd rather keep it a secret. Much love from a state, First.
Well, First, I would like to weigh in with my answer, which I believe is the definitive answer. Classic Blue Beetle Booster Gold relationship, headquarters in Vegas.
So much this. For those of you who don't know, the Blue and Gold team, neither of them were in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them was a sidekick to the other. They were members from their own sort of series that came together, and when they did, they were comedic gold.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Beetle was a smarter sort of tech savvy. He had gadgets. He was a genius. Booster Gold was from the future. Very vain, very self-absorbed, but had a good heart. So that is that what you're trying to say? One of us is smart and one of us is vain?
No, I think that I don't think one is subordinate to the other.
Yeah, I think equal partners.
Yeah, we are two people from different worlds who make our series better together.
All right, so that's
also on the count of three. Say which one you would be.
All right, one, two, three.
Booster
Gold.
There we go.
All right.
Turns out it's settled.
I guess I just called myself vain and self-absorbed.
I guess I just called myself smart.
It's weird, because I was thinking of Blue Beetle, but I said Booster Gold. How did you do that? You tricked me.
Eh.
Anyway, so that's how our dynamic would work. What would our powers be? Would they be different from each other, or would they be similar?
I don't know. Would our powers be based on our personality? Would it be would be like a Faustian thing.
What, you get what you wish for?
Yes, no.
I mean, I think we answered the question what superpowers we would have in the past, or what useless power we would have.
Oh yeah, mine is being able to teleport anywhere people can't see me.
And mine was the control over doors.
Mm-hmm.
So let's scratch
fit. No, that'd be great.
How would we be a superhero team?
That would be a...
What crime would we fight?
That would be a great comic.
Oh, and...
I like to imagine you create doors.
I create. Eventually, when I learn how to master my door-controlling powers, I can create doors.
And I just have to wait for people to blink and I'm gone. Papa.
We can't fight crime.
Yeah.
We're useless.
You're right. Okay, let's redo these superpowers.
All right.
As useful superpowers.
Useful. All right, useful superpowers. Well, I think my superpower would be great timing.
Great timing?
Yeah. So, like, I'm there where when I need to be. I can, like, hit the enemy when it's inconvenient for them. So it's like everything I do, I have the optimal timing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Man, that's perfect.
I know.
I don't know what mine would be.
Look, the world is your oyster.
Here's what mine would be.
What?
Completely indestructible. No.
All right.
Not strong.
Yeah.
Just completely indestructible.
Yeah.
No matter how hard you try.
You can't destroy me.
I still feel pain.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Jesus. But you don't... You're completely... Why would you want to feel pain?
Because I'd never quit. That's how I'd win.
That's how you would test your mettle, is this like, I was just thrown into a sun, but I'm completely indestructible. I felt everything.
Yeah.
But I came out fine on the other side.
I mean, it was hot, but I survived.
All right. So we've got optimal timing and then completely indestructible. I could use you as a weapon by throwing you into things.
Yeah. Or like if a car crashed into me a bit. That sucked.
Yeah.
It hurt, but I mean, I'll go
but
over
I'm
it.
Fine.
I'm not debilitated.
So it's all of you, right? So even your internal organs are completely indestructible.
Yeah.
That is a really awesome power.
There was, for a short while in the Superman comics, the canon, I don't know why I...
You put him in quotes.
I quoted canon. Canon is a thing.
Yeah,
canon. The canon is that he is difficult to injure because he has like a micrometer thin, like, kinetic shell around him that things can't permeate.
All right.
That's like, that'd be a cool power. Just
yeah.
Like, things don't affect you unless you want them to.
That is a cool power. You never get sunburned.
True. Maybe that would be my power. Just, things don't move me unless I want them to.
Your inertia.
Yes. Infinite inertia.
Well, and our secret lair would be in Vegas.
I think Vegas.
Why Vegas?
It's the most vegetarian-friendly city in the world.
John, also, if we had colorful costumes, we'd just blend in with all the Elvis impersonators.
True. Also, think about how cool it would be if we had a secret base in Vegas, and we had, like, a ramp for our supercar that just, like, emptied onto the Vegas Strip, and
yeah.
Then we're just on the Vegas Strip.
That would be cool. Most vegetarian-friendly city, really?
It is.
How?
I have no idea.
All
it apparently is.
Maybe there's enough, like, you know, multi-million dollar gamblers who are vegetarian that...
I mean, hell, every city's a buffet.
Every city is a buffet?
Every restaurant is a buffet.
Every restaurant is a buffet.
To me, every city is a buffet.
That's when you turn into a supervillain, but we'll get to that later.
Do you have something other than Vegas?
No.
Vegas is all right.
Vegas seems nice because, like, we would blend in with all the strange folk. The Vegas Strip is a very lovely place. It's always lit.
With your power of perfect timing, we'd never go hungry.
We wouldn't even hit traffic.
You'd be like, I want to play roulette.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
We would never need money.
Yep.
Perfect timing. I would just bet and, oh... Let's do it!
Let's become superheroes.
I want to get bitten by a radioactive clock.
I want to get bitten by inertia.
A radioactive inertia?
A radioactive physics book.
Oh my god.
It grows
gosh.
Like little vampire teeth and bites me.
What a good discussion.
Yeah, that was a really good discussion. Really fun.
Good question first.
I really want to be a superhero now.
I want to say her name was actually One now.
Yeah.
I don't actually remember.
Oh, it's all falling apart.
Oh, the artifice of this podcast is being stripped by the paint thinner of poor memory.
Okay, first one.
First one.
First one.
All right.
First one,
Eric,
and
Run.
All right. We've got you. You're on the shit list.
And if you want to be added to the the Rogues Gallery of Zero Credits. All you have to do is get in touch with us. And how can they do that, John?
Well, you could do like First One did today, or like Run in the past. You could email us at zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com. Send all your questions, your likes, your considerations, and your corrections.
And we'll address them on the show. We love doing this because it just shows, hey, people are listening, they're involved.
But you know, it really sucks that people can only email us if only there was a better way.
You're right. If you want to get in contact with us in a different way, you can go to Twitter and either DM us or write a message with 140 characters to @ZCPCWHJ.
That's the Zero Credits Podcast with Henry John.
ZCPCWHJ, and we'll get in touch, we'll respond, we'll like it, we will retweet it.
I guarantee you, if you get in contact with us in the next week, we will retweet it.
And that goes out to all of our 24 followers.
Ooh, even Taylor Swift?
She doesn't follow us.
Even Taylor Swift?
We follow her.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, you can get the zero credits bump of 24 followers.
The zero credits bump of approval stamp.
And more ways to get in contact with us will be developed in the future when we actually research what an Instagram is.
Search engine optimization?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're on Google.
We are on Google.
We're probably one of the top 14 search results for our Google.
If you type in zero credits exactly how we spell it, yeah, and then add the word podcast, mm-hmm, you can find us.
Nice. And you know what? Maybe in the future, we'll have a website.
Yeah.
I've been looking into that.
Okay.
It's all right.
That sounds cool.
I'm pretty sure we won't tax the bandwidth servers
of
any place.
You're right. And, you know, those are the ways.
Yeah. Make us popular. Crash our website.
Crash our website. Hashtag.
Okay, so the hashtag goes before.
What?
It's hashtag crash our. Crashtag hash our crash web.
I understood what you said.
Crashtag hash our crash web.
And, that's the show.
That's gonna do it.
The show is over.
For this week.
But next week, tune in for an all-new episode of Zero Credits.
And it might even be a special episode.
We don't know.
We really don't, but it might be. There's a non-zero chance that it will be special.
Same zero time.
Same zero place.
Same zero podcast. Credits. I feel like we could workshop that.
We really could have put more into that.
Yeah, all right, well.
Later, we're going to go become superheroes.
Bye.
Bad sport. Good.